A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's in the middle of kitting out a new apartment with industrial Euroboxes. The rigid 60 by 40 by 23 centimeter kind, about $30 a pop. He's already dropped around $1,000 on boxes. The problem isn't the boxes. The problem is getting them home. Delivery from the country's largest plastic box supplier is a flat $100, whether you order one box or 48. And the reason that stings is structural. The entire delivery system is built around the pallet as the atomic unit of commerce. If you're not buying a full pallet, you're paying a penalty for breaking the unit. Daniel's question is whether there are viable subunits of a pallet you can negotiate around, and whether informal pallet consolidation, piggybacking on another business's delivery, is something people actually do.
This is one of those moments where the invisible architecture of how stuff moves through the world suddenly becomes visible, and it's maddening. A $30 box becomes a $40 box the second you order 10 of them, not because the box changed, but because the $100 delivery fee is a tax on not thinking in pallets. It's a penalty for being a human being instead of a warehouse.
The box is cheap. The delivery is not. That's the whole tension in seven words.
What makes this worth unpacking is that there's a growing class of consumers who want industrial-grade gear for home use. Home storage enthusiasts, people setting up elaborate work-from-home setups, apartment dwellers who've done the math and realized that 10 years of flimsy IKEA bins cost more than buying Euroboxes once. They're hitting a logistics system that was never designed to talk to them.
The system speaks pallet. They speak shopping cart. There's no translator.
The shopping cart quantity. 5 boxes, 10 boxes, 15. That's the dead zone. The supplier's internal logic has clean breakpoints. Full pallet of 48, half pallet of 24, quarter pallet of 12, and sometimes a single layer of 4. Below 4, you're not even a rounding error. You're a special handling note that makes someone in the warehouse sigh.
The question Daniel's really asking is whether there's a way to hack the gap between 4 and 48. Can you find someone who's already ordering a pallet and glom onto their delivery? And if so, what do you need to know about the seller's internal units to make that conversation work?
I love this question because it's not theoretical. He's standing in an apartment with $1,000 of plastic boxes he can't economically get delivered unless he buys more boxes than he needs. It's also a window into how the physical economy actually operates, which is something most of us never have to think about until we try to buy something that isn't sold in units of one.
The pallet is the atom of the physical economy. You don't see it until you try to split it.
When you do try to split it, you discover that the $100 delivery fee isn't a delivery fee at all. It's a U-broke, the atom fee. The supplier's entire operation, warehouse racking, forklift paths, truck bed dimensions, shipping container math, is built around the standard EUR pallet, 1200 by 800 millimeters. That pallet perfectly tiles 460 by 40 centimeter Euroboxes per layer. Stack it 12 layers high, you've got 48 boxes. Wrap it in plastic, fork it onto a truck, done. The marginal cost of adding that pallet to a delivery route is basically zero if the truck's already going that way.
The moment you say, "I'd like 10 boxes, please," someone has to break the pallet, pull 10 boxes off, repack the remaining 38, label the 10 individually. The $100 isn't shipping. It's the labor of depalletizing, and the inefficiency of sending a commercial truck to a residential drop-off for 10 plastic bins.
That's the misconception most people have when they see that $100 line item. They think it's a rip-off. It's not. It's the honest cost of a logistics system that has no native mechanism for small quantity consumer orders. The supplier isn't gouging you. They're just not set up to serve you at all. The $100 is what it costs to make an exception.
Which is why Daniel's instinct to look for pallet consolidation is the right one. If you can't change the system, find someone who's already paying the $100 and share their pallet.
This is where it gets interesting, because pallet consolidation as a concept exists in business-to-business logistics all the time. Freight forwarders do less than truckload consolidation, where multiple shippers share space on a single pallet or truck. But that's designed for businesses shipping pallet quantities, not individuals shipping 10 boxes. Nobody offers retail pallet consolidation, because the margins are too thin and the coordination costs are too high.
You're left with the informal version. The business on your street that already orders from the same supplier. The hardware store in the industrial zone that gets a weekly delivery. The moving company that buys Euroboxes by the pallet and might let you tack on a few extras.
That's the core of what we should dig into. What are the actual subunits a seller recognizes? What does that conversation sound like when you call up and say, I don't want a full pallet, but I'm not asking for 10 loose boxes either? And is the informal consortium model, finding a neighbor business to piggyback on, something that actually works in practice? Or is it one of those ideas that sounds clever until you try it?
My guess is it works exactly once, if you happen to know the right person. But let's map out why, starting with the geometry of the pallet itself.
Let's start with what Daniel actually did. He didn't just browse a catalog and click Add to Cart. He drove out to the supplier's facility, about an hour from Jerusalem, specifically to see the boxes before committing. That's already not normal consumer behavior. That's someone who's done enough research to know that industrial goods reward inspection.
Which tells you something about the appeal of these things. You don't drive an hour to kick the tires on a plastic bin from the hardware store. You do it because Euroboxes are a different category of object entirely.
They really are. These aren't storage totes. They're DIN standard industrial containers. The 60 by 40 centimeter footprint is an actual German industrial norm, designed to interlock with warehouse racking, to stack securely without lids, to survive forklift impacts and 10 plus years of daily abuse. They don't warp in Israeli summer heat the way consumer bins do after 1 August on a balcony.
Daniel's building a storage system for a new apartment that he expects to last a decade. The math he's doing is, buy cheap bins 3 times, or buy Euroboxes once. The per year cost makes the $30 price tag reasonable. It's the delivery that breaks the equation.
Here's the key detail. He went out there, inspected the boxes, decided yes, these are worth it, and only then hit the delivery wall. He was ready to pay $1,000 for the product. The supplier had a willing customer with cash in hand, and the logistics still couldn't accommodate him efficiently. That's not a failure of sales. That's a structural gap between 2 different economic worlds.
The world where you order by the pallet, and the world where you order by the apartment.
The supplier isn't being unreasonable. From their perspective, the $100 flat fee is the minimum viable cost of putting a commercial truck on the road with a driver for a dedicated run. That truck has to navigate from an industrial zone to a residential address, possibly narrow streets, possibly no loading dock, possibly a driver who has to wait while someone figures out where to put 10 plastic boxes in a building with no freight elevator.
The warehouse manager ordering 48 boxes gets the same $100 charge, but it's spread across $1,400 of product. The home consumer ordering 10 boxes is spreading it across $300. Same fee, completely different economic meaning.
10 boxes at $30 each is $300. Add $100 for delivery, you're at $400. That's $40 a box, a 25% premium over the $32 effective price you'd pay per box if you bought a full pallet. The boxes didn't get better, you just bought fewer of them.
Which is the perverse incentive at the heart of this? The system is nudging you toward buying 48 boxes when you need 10, because the marginal cost of adding 38 more boxes is only the product cost. The delivery is already paid. You're leaving money on the table by not overbuying.
That's exactly the logic a warehouse manager uses. The truck's coming anyway, fill it up. But for Daniel, filling it up means storing 38 boxes he doesn't need in an apartment he's still organizing, with no garage or warehouse to absorb the overflow.
The question becomes, what are the intermediate units, if any, that make the delivery economics less punishing without requiring you to become a box wholesaler by accident? And can you share that delivery with someone who's already paying for it?
1200 by 800 millimeters. The EUR pallet, standard across Europe and Israel. 4 Euroboxes at 60 by 40 centimeters tile perfectly across that surface. No overhang, no wasted space. That's not an accident. The entire system was designed so the box and the pallet interlock like Lego bricks.
4 boxes per layer, up to 12 layers high, 48 boxes on a single pallet. and that pallet slides into warehouse racking that's exactly 1,200 millimeters wide. It fits through standard doorways. A forklift can grab it from any side. The truck bed is dimensioned to carry multiples of that footprint. The shipping container swallows them in neat rows.
Every link in the chain is calibrated to that module. When you order a full pallet, the warehouse worker takes a pallet that's already wrapped, already inventoried as a single unit, and moves it to the loading dock. 30 seconds with a forklift. When you order tin boxes, someone has to break the stretch wrap on an existing pallet, pull tin boxes off, rewrap the remaining 38, update the inventory count, label your tin boxes individually, and stage them somewhere that isn't a standard pallet slot. That's not 30 seconds. That's 15 minutes of non-standard labor.
The $100 delivery fee is really a handling surcharge dressed up as shipping. The actual truck cost is probably half of it. The rest is the warehouse saying you made us break a unit, and breaking units is expensive.
That's why the seller's internal subunits matter. If you call up and say, I want 10 boxes, you've already broken the pallet in their system. You're in the special handling category, and you're paying the $100 no matter what. But if you call up and say, I want a half pallet, 24 boxes, you're speaking their language. That's a unit they recognize because they can ship a partial pallet that's still wrapped as a stable stack.
The half pallet is still a pallet. It's just a shorter one.
Same footprint, fewer layers. The quarter pallet, 12 boxes, 3 layers of 4, same logic. Even a single layer of 4 boxes can sit on a pallet and be moved with a pallet jack. But the moment you go below 4, you're not a pallet anymore. You're loose boxes. And loose boxes break the system.
Which brings us back to Daniel's situation. He wants something in the 5 to 15 range. That's above the 4-box layer, but below the 12-box quarter pallet. It's the no-man's land, where you're paying full handling costs for a quantity that doesn't fill any recognized subunit.
The numbers make this painfully clear. Full pallet of $48, $1,440 for the boxes, plus $100 for delivery. $32.08 per box. That's the baseline. Now, 10 boxes, $300 for the boxes, plus $100 for delivery. $40 per box. That's a 25% premium for buying less.
25% is the penalty for being a human being instead of a warehouse.
Here's the interesting breakpoint. A half pallet, 24 boxes, comes to $720 for the boxes, plus the same $100 delivery. $34.17 per box. That's only a 6.5% premium over the full pallet price. You've cut the surcharge from 25% to single digits just by ordering in a unit the seller system already understands.
The gap between 4 boxes and 48 is where the market failure lives. 4 boxes, you're a layer. 12 boxes, you're a quarter pallet. 24, a half pallet. 48, full. Those are the clean breakpoints. Everything in between is a negotiation with a system that doesn't have a setting for you.
The reason there's no setting is that the industrial supply chain never needed one. The customer for these boxes has historically been warehouses, factories, hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, entities that think in pallet quantities by default. A hospital ordering medical supply bins isn't ordering 10. They're ordering 2 pallets. The idea of a private consumer wanting industrial Euroboxes for apartment storage simply didn't exist as a market segment when these distribution systems were built.
Which is exactly why Daniel's question about informal consolidation is so sharp. If the system has no setting for you, you either change the system, which you can't, or you find someone who already has a setting and borrow theirs.
The informal consolidation model is the obvious hack. Find a business that already orders from the same supplier. Ask if you can add a few boxes to their next pallet. The business pays the same $100 whether their pallet is full or has empty space, so you're not costing them anything extra. You're just filling air.
Air is the cheapest thing to ship.
In theory, yes. In practice, this requires knowing 3 things you almost certainly don't know. 1, that the business uses the same supplier. 2, their ordering cadence. Are they getting a delivery next week or next quarter? 3, that they're willing to receive your boxes, hold them, and coordinate with you for pickup. That last one is the real friction point. You're asking a business to become your micro warehouse.
For the price of a coffee, which Daniel suggested. And I think that's exactly right. The social currency matters more than the money. You're not paying them for a service. You're acknowledging that they did you a favor, and the coffee is the gesture that keeps it from feeling transactional in the wrong direction.
The ground floor business in Daniel's building is the dream scenario. Same address, same supplier, weekly deliveries. If that business has a pallet coming and there's room for 10 more boxes, Daniel's delivery cost drops from $100 to whatever a nice coffee and pastry set costs in Jerusalem these days.
Which is maybe 20 shekels. And you look like a mensch instead of someone who tried to negotiate a $100 delivery fee with a warehouse manager who has no authority to change it.
This only works if the stars align. The business has to be ordering a partial pallet. If their pallet is already maxed out at 48 boxes, there's no room. They have to trust that your boxes won't create a hassle. And you need a way to move 10 rigid Euro boxes from their receiving area to your apartment, which probably means multiple trips or a borrowed hand truck.
The boxes don't fit in a small car. That's part of why Daniel's in this situation in the first place. So even with free delivery to the building, you're still doing manual labor across whatever distance separates their loading area from your door.
This is where the comparison to buying clubs is instructive. Neighborhood food co-ops and wholesale buying groups work because the goods are small, the demand is regular, and someone volunteers to do the run. A Costco trip splits neatly across 5 families. A pallet of industrial plastic boxes doesn't split neatly across anything. The boxes are bulky, the need is one time, and the coordinator is doing real logistical work.
The buying club model assumes recurring demand. Daniel's Eurobox purchase is a one-off. He's not going to need another 10 boxes next month. So the consortium has to form around a single event, which makes it harder to justify the coordination overhead.
Which is why I think the honest answer to is pallet consolidation. A thing people actually do is, yes, but mostly by accident. It happens when someone knows someone. A friend runs a hardware store. A cousin manages a warehouse. The business next door has the same supplier and the owner is friendly. It's not a system, it's a social graph.
The social graph as logistics infrastructure. That's both the solution and the indictment of the solution.
The Israeli context makes this particularly acute. The supplier Daniel's dealing with is the largest plastic box distributor in the country. Their factory is an hour from Jerusalem. That $100 flat fee reflects Israeli fuel prices, labor costs, and the reality that a commercial delivery truck is not a nimble vehicle. It can't double park on a narrow residential street the way a delivery van can. The driver needs a loading zone, ideally a dock, or at minimum a wide enough curb cut to lower a pallet with a lift gate.
Which is another hidden cost, embedded in that $100. The truck isn't just driving an hour each way. It's navigating from an industrial zone optimized for 18-wheelers to a residential address where the driver might have to circle the block 3 times and then carry boxes up a flight of stairs because there's no freight elevator.
The supplier's logistics are built around commercial deliveries to commercial addresses. Warehouses have docks. Factories have forklifts. Apartment buildings have neither. The $100 is partly hazard pay for the driver who has to figure out where to put 10 plastic boxes in a building lobby without blocking the mailboxes.
The second order question is whether this gap ever closes. If enough home storage enthusiasts and work-from-home outfitters start wanting industrial Euroboxes, does the supplier eventually offer a consumer bundle? A mixed pallet of popular sizes shipped to a neighborhood drop point?
I think the demand aggregation problem kills that in the crib. To make a consumer bundle work, you need enough buyers in a single geographic area, ordering at roughly the same time, wanting roughly the same mix of sizes. That's a coordination problem that Amazon solves with $100 billion logistics infrastructure. A plastic box distributor in Israel isn't going to build that for a niche of a niche market.
The niche being people who want DIN standard industrial containers for their apartments and are willing to pay $30 a box for them. That's not a market segment. That's a handful of obsessives with good taste in storage.
I say this as someone who deeply respects the obsession. But the economics of consumer-friendly delivery for heavy, bulky, low-margin industrial goods just don't pencil out unless someone's willing to lose money building the habit. No venture capitalist is funding Uber for pallet consolidation.
The unsexiest pitch deck of all time.
We're left with the informal model. It's hacky, it doesn't scale, and it depends entirely on who you know. But for the one person trying to buy 10 Euro boxes right now, it's the difference between paying a 25% surcharge and paying nothing beyond the product cost and a coffee.
Which means the actionable question isn't, does this exist as a service? It's who near me is already ordering from this supplier, and how do I find them?
The answer to that is probably, ask the supplier. Not, can you consolidate my order with someone else's? They won't do that for you, it's not their job. But, do you have any other customers in my area? Is a question a sales rep might answer if you're friendly about it. They know their delivery routes. They know which businesses in Jerusalem get weekly pallets.
That's the one piece of information that turns this from fantasy into plan. The supplier won't consolidate for you, but they might tell you who to call. After that, it's just a conversation with a neighbor.
If you're the person standing in front of a $100 delivery fee right now, what do you actually do? Let's pull out the three things that are genuinely actionable.
First one is the simplest and the one most people never try. When you're buying industrial goods as a private consumer, ask the seller about pallet subunits. Not, can I get a discount on shipping? That's a dead end. Ask order your half pallet and quarter pallet quantities, and do you price those differently?
The reason this matters even if the delivery fee doesn't change is that it tells you what the seller's internal units are. Once you know they recognize a half pallet of 24 boxes as a standard unit, you're no longer negotiating in the dark. You can say, I'll take a half pallet, and they know exactly what that means. No special handling, no broken pallet, just a shorter stack on the same footprint.
The delivery fee might still be $100, but you move from awkward exception to standard order in their system, and that changes how they treat you. It also gives you a clean number to plan around. 24 boxes at $30 each is $720, plus $100 delivery. $34 a box. That's the number.
The second actionable move is the one we've been circling. Find a nearby business that already orders from your supplier and ask to piggyback. Industrial zones are the prime hunting ground. Hardware stores, moving companies, warehouse supply shops. These are businesses that think in pallets by default and often have standing orders with the same distributors.
The approach matters. Don't walk in and say, can I add 10 boxes to your next delivery? That sounds like work for them. Walk in and say, I noticed your order from this supplier. I'm trying to get some boxes from them too. Would it be possible to add a few to your next pallet? I'll pick them up from you the same day and bring coffee.
The I'll pick them up from you part is critical. You're not asking them to deliver to your door. You're asking them to receive a slightly taller pallet and let you come get your boxes. And you're showing up with a small car that can fit 4 to 6 boxes per trip, which is fine, because you're making multiple trips from their loading area to your apartment, not from the factory an hour away.
The small car becomes viable when the distance collapses from 60 kilometers to 60 meters. That's the whole game. You're not solving the long-haul problem. You're solving the last-meter problem, and the business solved the long-haul for you without even trying.
The third insight is the counterintuitive one. Sometimes buying the full pallet actually makes sense, even for a private consumer. 48 boxes at $1,440 plus 100 delivery works out to about $32 a box. That's the best per-unit price you'll ever get. If you have space to store a pallet, a storage room, a garage, a patient spouse, and you can use or resell the extras, you come out ahead.
The secondary market for these things is real. Not liquid, not fast, but real. People setting up storage systems, people who are moving, small businesses. They all need Euroboxes and they all face the same delivery problem. If you've already absorbed the delivery cost and you're selling boxes at $35 each, you're undercutting the $40 effective price of a 10-box order and still making your money back.
You become the neighborhood micro-distributor. The person who bought the pallet and is slowly divesting boxes to other apartment dwellers who only need 5 or 6. It's not a business. It's a favor that pays for itself.
Which brings us to the broader lesson underneath all of this. The pallet is the atom of the physical economy. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Every warehouse, every truck, every shipping container, every loading dock, they're all built around this 1200 by 800 millimeter rectangle. Understanding its geometry and economics doesn't just help you buy plastic boxes. It helps you understand why things cost what they cost whenever you're buying something that normally moves on pallets.
The workarounds we've been describing, asking about subunits, finding a business to piggyback on, buying the full pallet and reselling extras, these all flow from the same insight. You're not fighting the system. you're finding the seams where the system already has flexibility and slipping through them.
The system speaks ballot. You don't need to become fluent. You just need to learn enough to ask for a half ballot and know who to bring coffee.
Here's the open question I keep turning over. We've got this growing tribe of home storage enthusiasts, work-from-home outfitters, people who've done the life cycle math on cheap bins versus Euroboxes and are ready to pay for quality. Is that ever going to be enough demand for a supplier to build a consumer-friendly delivery option? Or is this gap permanent?
I think the gap is permanent for the physical delivery part. The economics of sending a commercial truck to residential addresses for 10 plastic boxes don't improve just because more people want 10 plastic boxes. The truck still costs what it costs. The driver still has to navigate narrow streets. The warehouse still has to break pallets.
The margins on these boxes aren't software margins. There's no scale fixes everything story here. The boxes are injection molded plastic. The material cost, the mold amortization, the factory floor space, those are real and they don't get dramatically cheaper with volume. The supplier's not sitting on a 50% margin. They can reinvest in a consumer delivery fleet.
Meanwhile, 3D printing and on-demand manufacturing are slowly shifting the unit economics of small-batch industrial goods. But a 3D printer isn't going to spit out a 60 by 40 centimeter reinforced Eurobox that survives a decade of abuse. The injection molding physics don't miniaturize. A mold for a Eurobox costs tens of thousands of dollars. The per box cost only makes sense if you're making hundreds of thousands of them.
The physical delivery of heavy plastic boxes isn't going to be disrupted by software or 3D printing or any of the usual suspects. The pallet remains the atom. The gap remains the gap. And the informal consortium remains the workaround.
Which means the people who figure this out are going to be the ones who get good at the social layer. Knowing their neighbors, mapping the industrial zones near their apartments, learning which businesses order from which suppliers. It's not a logistics solution, it's a community solution dressed up in logistics clothing.
I think that's actually the satisfying part. The system doesn't have a setting for you, so you build a setting out of relationships. It's hacky and unscalable and completely dependent on who you know, and that's exactly why it works when it works.
We'd love to hear from listeners who've done this, or tried to. Have you ever piggybacked on a business's delivery to avoid a flat shipping fee? Have you found a workaround for buying industrial goods as a private consumer that we haven't thought of? Send us those stories. The hacks that only work once are often the most instructive ones.
Because someone somewhere is staring at a $100 delivery fee right now, wondering if there's a better way. And the answer might be sitting in a listener's inbox.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Early Islamic cartographers in the 9th century produced maps where south was at the top and north at the bottom, a convention that persisted for centuries. But by the 1840s, European lithographers reproducing these maps for scholarly editions sometimes flipped them to north-up orientation without noting the change, introducing a subtle optical distortion into the historical record that went uncorrected for decades.
Medieval map scholars were accidentally gaslit by 19th century printers.
The printers probably thought they were being helpful. There, fixed it for you. This has been my Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. You can send your own industrial to consumer workarounds, pallet hacking stories, or whatever else you're puzzling over to show at myweirdprompts.com.
We're at myweirdprompts.com. Tell us what weird corner of the economy you've had to hack your way into.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Talk to you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.